from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
The Drive Home.
Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need, you'll find it right here on The Drive Home on America's Radio News. 6 minutes after the top of the hour, this is Ernie Brown, and here are some of the stories coming up for you today.
The North Korean military can move large units without causing a spike in intercepts or anything. They can move missiles. They can launch them in a minute's notice.
Do we really know what's happening in North Korea?
Obviously, the elected leaders did an extraordinary job moving it forward, but it couldn't have happened if they weren't hearing from people in their respective districts.
The president wants gun control legislation passed.
12, 13 games ago, all these guys, if they say hello, they get a tattoo. They said, if you win the national championship, coach, you getting a tattoo? I said, hell yes, I'm getting a tattoo.
Louisville coach Rick Pitino has a promise to fulfill.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Officials say 14 people have been wounded in a stabbing attack at a Houston area college campus. Cy-Fair Volunteer Fire Department spokesman Robert Rasta said 12 people were taken to area hospitals after the attack today on the Lone Star Community College campus in Cypress. The Harris County Sheriff's Department confirmed at least 14 people wounded, and authorities had one suspect in custody. Both agencies say at least four of those injured were life-flighted in critical condition. Rasta said several patients refused treatment at the scene, and all the wounds were consistent with stabbing. Harris County Sheriff's Office spokesman Tom Gilliland said that authorities don't believe a second suspect was involved. Lone Star had earlier posted an alert on its website warning of two armed suspects, and the campus went into lockdown. The White House says North Korea's threat of nuclear war and warnings to foreigners to evacuate the South Korean capital of Seoul is more unhelpful rhetoric that only escalates tensions and further isolates the communist regime. White House spokesman Jay Carney told reporters today that the U.S. is taking prudent measures to respond to stepped-up rhetoric from Pyongyang, including repositioning missile defense assets and the stealth bomber flights that were part of the joint military exercises with South Korea. Addressing the latest North Korean saber-rattling, Carney said, it's unhelpful, it's concerning, and it's provocative. A spring snowstorm delivering heavy snow, high winds, and freezing drizzle is causing travel problems from Wyoming to Minnesota. In Wyoming, a 100-mile stretch of Interstate 25 between Cheyenne and Douglas was closed today, as well as a 125-mile section of I-80 between Laramie and Rawlins. Conditions in South Dakota caused the postponement of numerous local elections, and some schools in Minnesota dismissed students early. High winds, freezing drizzle, and some snow affecting parts of Kansas. Snow in Denver had been lighter than expected, but still around 500 flights were canceled at Denver International Airport. The storm also is producing some rain and possible tornadoes in Oklahoma and the North Texas area. Well, with all the talk of the nuclear threat from North Korea, just what sort of bomb capacity does that country have? Senator Jim Inhofe, the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, says they may have more than enough plutonium for 6 to 8 devices, but it may be more. Here's what he had to say.
Let's just look at North Korea. Mm-hmm. They have enough plutonium right now for from 6 to 8 bombs. I'm guessing it's a lot more than that. And the reason is, back in 1998 when Clinton was president, I remember we were talking about North Korea, and I questioned the fact that I thought they were further along than they were. And they said at that time, because I wrote a letter, and this is very important, on the 24th of August of 1998 to the Clinton administration at that time, I said, how long will it be until North Korea has a multi-stage rocket? It came back between 5 and 10 years. 7 days later, on August 31st, they fired one.
Whoa. Now,
if we were that far off in our intelligence back then, Rusty, where are we today? Are we any better, any closer to reality? I'd suggest no.
Families of the victims of the Newtown, Connecticut shooting are in Washington this week to plead with congressional lawmakers for tighter gun control. Senator Johnny Isaacson, a Republican of Georgia, will be meeting with some of the Newtown families. Here's what he told CBS.
Well, first of all, the heart and soul of every American goes out to the families of those who lost their lives at Sandy Hook. They deserve a right to be able to sit down and talk with me, and I gave them that right and will be happy to meet with them. There was no ambivalence on the gun issue. I think everybody knows what the issues are. We have not seen the final draft of the legislation that was produced, I understand, last night, but I think it deserves a vote up or down. Well, it's having an impact. It's getting the phones to ring, and they're ringing on both sides. Michael Bloomberg was running ads back in Georgia telling everybody to call Senator Chambliss, and and myself. I know there are other programs going on to drive the phone calls, and they're doing their job. You know, there are two amendments at issue here. One's the First Amendment that you enjoy, the freedom of speech. That's what they're enjoying. Second is the right to bear arms, which is the whole issue in terms of the gun control.
And then we go to General Colin Powell. He told MSNBC yesterday what made Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan such a pair.
There's no question about it, Andrea. They were a pair. And why? Well, they had a common view about economics. They had a common view about the power of democracy and free economic systems. They had a common view about the evil of communism. And in terms of the way Reagan and Thatcher approached the Soviet Union, it was, let's not destroy them. Let's just show these folks what a better world there is waiting for them. And it was that belief in democracy that you could show it as a candle to others who light up a darkened place is what I think made it so successful, and it's what gave Gorbachev something to work with rather than the implacable enemies that were out to destroy the Soviet Union.
Standing by now at the entertainment desk on America's Radio News, here's John Normand.
The GSN Television Network is looking to build on the success of the American Bible Challenge with a church-based dating show. The American Bible Challenge, which just began its second season, is a runaway hit for the game show-focused cable network. Jeff Foxworthy is the host, and it quizzes contestants on their biblical knowledge. The show gets more than twice the viewers than anything else on the network. GSN is developing It Takes a Church, where church parishioners compete to find a love interest for a single member of the congregation. GSN programming chief Amy Davis said Tuesday that no air date has been set for the new show. Gospel superstar Kirk Franklin has recently joined the American Bible Challenge as its musical director. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on the program, the IRS fighting identity theft. Also, police have to break up celebrations after Louisville wins big last night. And the Senate Minority Leader's office was bugged. But by whom? From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast, this is The Drive Home on America's Radio News.
Bringing you the very latest from across America and around the world. America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
19 past the top of the hour on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown, and this is The Drive Home. The nation's largest banks begin sending payments this week to millions of Americans who may have been wrongfully foreclosed upon during the housing crisis. There is a Federal Reserve and the U.S. Comptroller of the Currency says a total of $3.6 billion in cash will be distributed to 4.2 million borrowers. Payments will range from $300 to $125,000. About 90% of borrowers whose mortgages were serviced by 11 of the banks will receive payments by the end of April. The last group of payments expected in mid-July. The banks, which include Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, reached a settlement with the federal agencies in January. They agreed to pay a total of $9.3 billion in cash and in reductions of mortgage balances. The Air Force is grounding about a third of its active-duty combat aircraft because of automatic spending cuts. The stand-down will affect units stationed in the U.S., Europe, and the Pacific. Those units include fighter, bomber, aggressor, and airborne warning and control squadrons. Air Combat Command at Joint Base Langley-Eustace in Hampton, Virginia, made the announcement today. Some units deployed that include F-16s, F-22s, A-10s, and B-1s will stand down after they return home from their deployments. Other units begin today. The Air Force says the stand down is a result of cuts to the command's operations and maintenance account. The Air Force says it has to reduce its flying by about 45,000 fewer training hours before October 1st than it previously planned. Former NFL players trying to sue the league over concussion-linked injuries have argued in court that the NFL glorified violence and profited from damaging hits to the head. Players lawyer David Frederick also called the NFL's Brain Injury Committee a sham that spread misinformation. Frederick's remarks came in a pivotal hearing in Philadelphia on lawsuits filed by about 4,200 former players and their families. Some players are suffering from dementia or depression and fault the league for rushing them back onto the field. NFL lawyer Paul Clement says that teams bear primary responsibility for health and safety under the player's contract, and he said injury claims belong in arbitration under the collective bargaining agreement. The U.S. District Judge Anita Brody appears most interested in whether the contract gives anybody specific responsibility for latent brain injuries. Well, the North Koreans have been throwing around all kinds of threats to launch a nuclear war and at the United States and its allies in what many believe to be an attempt to gain concessions for ending their aggression. Earlier today, Admiral Samuel Locklear, the commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, in testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee, reiterated that should North Korea try to attack, we're ready.
Are you satisfied that we would be ready if there were such a limited military action from North Korea?
I am satisfied that we're ready today, yes, sir.
Do you believe that we have the ability to intercept a missile if the North Koreans launch a missile, as is widely reported they would do in coming days?
I believe we have the a credible ability to defend the homeland, to defend Hawaii, defend Guam, to defend our four deployed forces, and defend our allies.
Do we have the capability to intercept a missile if the North Koreans launch within the next several days?
We do.
Would you recommend such action?
If the missile was in defense of the homeland, I would certainly recommend that action. And if it was defense of our allies, I would recommend that action. An impetuous young leader continues to focus on provocation rather than on his own people.
President Obama spoke in Hartford, Connecticut about gun control. And after the speech, families of the victims of the Newtown massacre flying back to Washington with the president on Air Force One. Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat of Connecticut, told MSNBC he thinks the Newtown families will be very effective.
Well, there's nobody that can speak for gun violence legislation better than the Newtown families. They're going to be here this week. And in Connecticut, about a month ago, people didn't think that the state legislature could pass a ban on these high-capacity magazines. And the state legislature did with overwhelming support, in part because these Newtown families came to the state capitol and legislators couldn't look them in the eye and say no. And listen, I know that the families aren't going to be able to see every member of the United States Senate this week and next week, but every senator has to ask, do they want to just sit on the sidelines and allow this to happen again? It is going to happen again. Maybe it won't be 20 kids, but even if it's 5 or 10 or 3, we need to do something here to make sure that it doesn't.
And then we go to Ohio Senator Rob Portman. He joined Politico for a discussion on how to get the nation's economy back on track. And he says it all comes down to repairing the broken tax code.
It's true there are a lot of folks out there are going to try to protect, you know, their own preference. But look, you know, we've spent since 1986 making our code more complicated. Every other one of our global competitors, including all of the countries of the so-called OECD, the other developed countries, all of them have reformed their tax code except us. And all of them have lowered their rates. Except us, every single one of them, to the point that we now have the highest rates in the world, which is not a number one title that you want to have, because it drives investment and capital to other countries. And that's what's happening. We're losing corporate headquarters right and left. We're losing acquisitions. America's economy is shrinking relative to the global economy, in part because of a tax code that's out of date. So the corporate community better get their act together and come to Washington, not to say, don't touch my preference, but to say, we must reform this tax code to make our economy more competitive. If we don't do that, we'll continue to see the loss of jobs.
Well, with the 2013 Masters beginning April 11th, four-time champion Tiger Woods sat down with ESPN to talk about his game on Tuesday.
I feel that I've improved and I've gotten more consistent. And I think the wins show that. And that's something that I'm proud of so far this year. And hopefully I can continue it this week and the rest of the year. I've been in the mix on the back nine, either not executed, not made enough putts, or didn't take care of the par fives, or whatever it may be. I've been in the mix. It's just that I haven't gotten it done. I've had Phil and Vijay and Ernie and David for a number of years. And now, you know, Rory's the leading of this new younger generation.
At the legal desk now on America's Radio News, John Norman.
A California lawmaker believes that last call for drinks at 2 a.m. is too early to set down the shot glasses and beer steins. State Senator Mark Leno's proposal to let the liquor flow until 4 a.m. is a way to draw more tourists and with them more revenue and jobs is already spawning a sharp debate from watering holes from San Francisco to Los Angeles. Leno says the measure would make California more competitive with other hotspots like New York, Las Vegas, and Miami. Night spot owners say a later last call will be good for business, but law enforcement officials argue it increases the chances that cities will see more public drunkenness, violence, drunken driving, and possibly fatalities. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News, not many takers on the Obama budget. That'll be released tomorrow, but already he's getting it from both sides. ExxonMobil paying millions over groundwater contamination. They lose the case, and the White House says North Korea is just making things worse. News from around the world and across the nation, we always have it for you right here on America's Radio News.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Covering the United States and the world right here on America's Radio News. 27 before the top of the hour, the drive home continues. This is Ernie Brown with these stories coming up for you.
The North Korean military can move large units without causing a spike in intercepts or anything. They can move missiles. They can launch them at a minute's notice.
Do we really know what's happening in North Korea?
Obviously, the elected leaders did an extraordinary job moving it forward, but it couldn't have happened if they weren't hearing from people in their respective districts.
The president wants gun control legislation passed.
12, 13 games ago, all these guys, if they say hello, they get a tattoo. They said, if you win the national championship, coach, you getting a tattoo? I said, hell yes, I'm getting a tattoo.
Louisville coach Rick Pitino has a promise to fulfill.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Liberal groups and like-minded lawmakers from the House and Senate are rallying outside the White House. They're urging President Obama to change his mind on cuts to Social Security and Medicare that are part of the budget he'll release tomorrow. Organizers say they're delivering petitions with more than 2 million signatures to the White House. They're especially upset over an inflation adjustment that would reduce cost of living increases for Social Security beneficiaries. Senator Bernie Sanders, a Vermont independent, allied with the Democrats, is warning any lawmaker who supports it that they may not keep their jobs in the next election. He said he's extremely disappointed in Obama's decision. The White House says the president's budget isn't ideal, but represents a compromise aimed at finding a bipartisan solution to the nation's budget challenges. The U.S. Navy's canceled the remainder of the elite Blue Angels demonstration team's 2013 season because of federal cuts. The commander of Naval Air Forces announced the decision today. The Blue Angels have performed at air shows around the world for more than 60 years. The fighter pilots selected to serve the two-year tour with the team are among the world's best and often graduates of the nation's famed Top Gun Air Tactics School. A spokesman for the Navy said team members would be allowed to fly minimal hours to maintain flight proficiency in the FA-18 fighter jets, but the 6-jet squadron would discontinue group practices for the remainder of the season. The FBI has been asked to look into whether Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell's campaign headquarters were bugged after a recording of a private campaign meeting surfaced in a liberal-leaning magazine. McConnell campaign manager Jesse Benton said his staff is working with the FBI because of what he called Watergate-style tactics to bug his office. Mother Jones magazine published the recording of the February meeting in which McConnell aides were discussing research into potential Democratic challengers, including actress Ashley Judd, who later decided not to run. Aides talked on the recording about Judd's political positions, religious beliefs, and mental health. Benton says the recording device had been placed in McConnell's office without consent. Neither the FBI in Louisville nor the magazine immediately returned telephone calls seeking comment about that. Gregory Tiangelo joins us, the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Ernie. Happy to be here.
Well, happy to have you on the show. Glad you have the time today. Now, my understanding is the Log Cabin Republicans have joined Massachusetts Senate candidate Dan Winslow in an FEC advisory requesting demand for clarity on campaign finance laws.
Yeah, definitely. This is something that, when you talk about why marriage is important to committed same-sex couples, this is a reason that might not be the first one that comes to people's minds. The fact is that with the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, on the books, you have inequalities that exist in campaign finance system and, as by extension, freedom of speech. So in a nutshell, the fact is that you can have a heterosexual couple who is married, where you have one person who is a primary income earner for the household, and say, you know, you have a husband working and the wife is staying home with the kids, or vice versa, a working mother and a man staying home with the kids, or on disability for whatever reason. Both of those individuals are allowed to max out on campaign contributions to federal candidates from a single bank account, whereas gay couples, even if they are married in one of the 9 states in the District of Columbia that currently allow same-sex couples to get married, are not allowed to make those campaign contributions from a single account, or at least there's a lack of clarity about that, and that's what prompted Dan Winslow, prompted Log Cabin Republicans to join forces with Orrin Fox and file specifically a request from the FEC asking for clarification of this. This is an issue to us that's a matter of not only campaign finance but also freedom of speech and equal rights, and it's something that certainly from Mr. Winslow's perspectives needs to be addressed before the Supreme Court rules on the Defense of Marriage Act in June. Mr. Winslow is facing a primary at the end of this month.
Now, what has the FEC said so far?
Well, this is a request that just immediately went into them as soon as the paperwork was completed. So they have the request. It is in their hands. They received it, I believe, last Friday, went up on their website just late yesterday. And they have traditionally they have 60 days to reply to requests like this. Because Mr. Winslow is in a primary that takes place on April 30th of this month, I believe there is an expedited process. So the FEC is going to have to respond to this prior to that primary date. So we should be hearing back in the next two and a half weeks.
Would this cost a candidate donations?
Yeah, that's exactly the point that we're making.
Yeah.
The fact that you could have a married same-sex couple. We do have a married same-sex couple who are requesters on this FEC request for an opinion. This is not hypotheticals that we're dealing with. We actually have a married same-sex couple who was married in the state that Mr. Winslow is running in Massachusetts, who is interested in contributing to his campaign. One of them is a primary income earner for the household, and they have a joint bank account, and there's questions as to whether or not they can both contribute from that one individual bank account. So this is something that we're not dealing in hypotheticals. We're dealing in reality here, both from the requesters that we have on this FEC request and also certainly from Mr. Winslow's campaign.
Can they just make the donation and beg forgiveness later?
this is not really something to play around with. I mean, I don't know who's going to be the test person there that rolls the dice and wonders if they're going to be face penalties from the FEC for doing this. And also, we don't want to encourage illicit behavior. You know, we want to make sure that everything is done to the letter of the law, which is also one of the reasons why this letter of request was filed with the FEC, because we wanted to see exactly in their view, what does the law state? What does the law allow? What does the law allow married same-sex couples in the United States to do legally when it comes to campaign contributions? And what is outside of what is recognized as acceptable practice with the Federal Defense of Marriage Act still on the books while we wait for the Supreme Court ruling?
See, I wonder, because the Supreme Court ruling, yeah, you're right, it's going to come too late. I wonder, as long as it's in effect, as long as DOMA's in effect, if their hands are tied at the FEC.
Well, this is now the ball's in the FEC's court. It's up to them to declare this. But certainly, you know, we see there's a lack of clarity that's happening here. Mr. Winslow's campaign clearly sees a lack of clarity on this. And what we want to see is, you know, is it a violation of an individual's, or in this case a couple's, freedom of speech when these restrictions or potential restrictions on political speech via campaign contributions exist?
If DOMA does go, do you think there's going to be a lot of issues like this that are going to come up, that are going to have to be talked about and changed?
Yeah, there's going to be. I think there's going to be quite a bit of consideration, and the time that I'm spending here in Washington, you know, we're bracing for all potential outcomes for the Supreme Court ruling, whether it's one that we welcome or whether it's one that's disappointing. But you know, the general consensus I'm getting from people that I'm speaking with up on the Hill is that should the Supreme Court overturn the Defense of Marriage Act, there is going to be some really thoughtful considerations about the barriers that exist for married same-sex same-sex couples in states that do recognize those partnerships. I guess much in the same way that you have instances and questions that have arisen regarding members of the military who are gay and lesbian since the policy of don't ask, don't tell was repealed. So, you know, we're going to have to consider these questions, but just as we've done this with don't ask, don't tell, you know, I imagine it's going to be a very respectful and very thoughtful considerations.
All right. Greg Angelo, Executive Director of the Log Cabin Republicans, with us on America's Radio News. Greg, thanks for coming on again.
My pleasure, Ernie.
Coming up on the program, a large snowstorm hitting the Rocky Mountain states. That's causing some travel delays. Also, the U.S. says hacking is causing a lot of distrust with China. And Austin, Texas, the next location for Google's super-fast internet program. Covering the U.S. and the world, this is America's Radio News.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News. A story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
This is The Drive Home on America's Radio News, and this is Ernie Brown, 11 before the top of the hour. Parents, workers, students, they're all once afraid to reveal that they were living in the U.S. illegally. Well, now they're trying to shape the national immigration reform debate. They're sharing their stories, attending marches and sit-ins. They're lobbying state and national lawmakers for expanded rights. They say they're willing to face possible arrest and deportation if it means giving a voice to a community long in the shadows. The size of the pro-immigrant movement will be on display tomorrow at rallies around the country, including one in Washington, D.C. It's unclear how successful the movement will be in persuading Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Anti-illegal immigration activists say they're not worried that lawmakers or voters will be swayed by the emotional message being presented. The budget proposal to be released by the White House tomorrow will include new steps to combat what the Internal Revenue Service says is an exponential growth in tax refund-related identity theft. A preview of the measures provided by administration officials include increasing criminal sentences for those convicted of tax-related identity theft and creating new civil penalties for those who file fraudulent returns. The government would also limit access to Social Security Administration files on deceased individuals that have been used for those seeking fraudulent refunds and removes Social Security numbers from some forms that employers have to provide to the IRS. As of the end of 2012, the IRS had more than 3,000 employees, more than double from the previous year, working only on identity theft issues. Kentucky police used pepper spray and an armored car to calm disturbances that erupted at the tail end of celebrations following the Cardinals' NCAA championship win over Michigan. Gatherings were mostly peaceful last night following Louisville's 82-76 victory, the school's first title since 1986. Louisville police said most of the 23 arrests were due to drunken or disorderly conduct. But things did get out of hand as the celebration was winding down early this morning, with police in riot gear and an armored car arriving after the crowds refused to disperse. Police spokeswoman Carrie Klain said several scuffles followed. Some partiers threw bottles at police, hitting an officer in the head. Police had to respond with pepper spray. Klain said the officer received minor injuries and was treated at a hospital and released. It'll take more than spelling to win this year's National Spelling Bee. The youngsters will have to know some definitions as well. For the first time, vocabulary will be part of the Scripps National Spelling Bee when the competition is held next month near the nation's capital. The spellers will still take part in the traditional on-stage spelling rounds with a familiar bell, but they'll also take multiple-choice vocabulary tests to determine the semifinalist and the finalist. The final rounds will look the same, with spellers eliminated until there's a champion. The Bee Executive Director Paige Kimball said changes help reinforce the purpose of the Bee, which is to encourage students to broaden their knowledge of the English language. This year's Bee takes place May 28th through May 30th. China has the best chance of any nation to talk some sense into their belligerent neighbor, North Korea. As North Korea continues to ratchet up the rhetoric, where is China on this? The former U.S. ambassador to China, John Huntsman, told CNN how their weakening influence in North Korea might not be enough to stop Pyongyang.
Well, of course they'll use their influence, and they have crisis after crisis in years past. I mean, this is music we've heard before. The question becomes, will North Korea listen to their admonition?
Well, they have influence, but they've been lied to and they've been cheated by North Korea. And they know that, and they're feeling the sting of it. I must say that after the sinking of the Chonan a couple of years ago and the island shelling, the South Korean ship, they delivered some very, very hard-hitting messages to the North. I'd have to say that they brought the level of hostility down through their shuttle diplomacy behind the scenes. But I think they have less and less clout. And one of the reasons they have less and less clout is because, you know, business is done by people. They have less of a personal rapport at their senior levels with North Korean leadership than they did in years past.
Huntsman also told CNN that North Korea's seemingly crazy behavior is completely rational for them.
So we're in the cycle of North Korea rattling the region, and they do this periodically, because you've got a political leader internally who's trying to shore up his credentials, in this case, Kim Jong-un. Secondly, they're rewarded for this kind of behavior. They're rewarded sometimes by the South. They're rewarded by China. They know how far to take out the extreme measures, the saber rattling in the region. And sadly, every time this happens, they get rewarded in some way, shape, or form.
Well, just how safe is the U.S. from a nuclear missile attack? Well, it depends on which coast the attack is crossing. Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma told the Rusty Humphrey Show that we have a very robust system protecting the West Coast from a Korean launch, so he's not concerned about that direction. However, despite clear intelligence that Iran will have the ability to attack the U.S. directly by 2015, we don't have a comparable East Coast defense.
Everyone talks about North Korea. I'm probably even more concerned about Iran than I am North Korea. And for this reason, right. We know, and our intelligence has known since 2007, that they're going to have a weapon and a delivery system that would hit the United States by 2015. Now, that's the very reason that two years prior to the election, the first election of Obama, we decided to put the ground-based interceptor in Poland. And that was to protect anything coming from the East Coast. Yes, we can hit a bullet with a bullet. We've shown we can do it, and we'd have a chance to shoot, look, and shoot a second time. I'm happy with that. But they're all located on the West Coast. The problem is not from there. Iran has said they're going to have that capability, and we don't have the capability of knocking that down without a third site. And this president will not give us a third site, and he knocked down the only defense, the major defense we had, and that was in Poland.
And then here's a special report from New York's governor seeking stricter public integrity laws in the face of new corruption allegations.
Facing a parade of public corruption cases among state legislators, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is proposing stricter laws against bribery and giving state prosecutors more power to bring charges.
You can't have, when it comes to public integrity, you can't have enough police officers on the beat, right? You can't have enough sets of eyes.
The package would, among other things, make official misconduct a felony instead of a misdemeanor. The governor acted the week after federal prosecutors brought corruption charges against three legislators, including a state senator who allegedly tried to bribe his way onto the New York City mayoral ballot.
And, of course, the big game last night was the NCAA basketball championship, and you have Louisville over Michigan, 82-76. After the game, Coach Rick Pitino of Louisville Cardinals told CBS's Jim Nance about the win being after being inducted into the Hall of Fame the same day, and a promise to his players to get tattooed if they won.
The University of Michigan, for a young basketball team, to play that well is absolutely incredible. They are a great basketball team. We beat a great basketball team, probably because I have the 13 toughest guys I've ever coached.
And, Coach, I hear them. I'm picking up something here that you kind of owe them one with this victory. What's this all about?
Well, about 12, 13 games ago, all these guys, if they say hello, they get a tattoo. They said, if you win the national championship, Coach, you getting a tattoo? I said, hell yes, I'm getting a tattoo. All throughout my life, I've had the greatest players. Players put coaches in the Hall of Fame.
Coming up on America's Radio News, a stabbing attack injures several people at a college in Houston. Illegal immigrants tell their stories for the immigration bill debate. And the top U.S. commander in the Pacific says North Korea is a threat. With news from around the world and across the nation, this is America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news.
Or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network. The Drive Home.
From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast on America's Radio News. Thanks for joining me on The Drive Home at 6 after the top of the hour. Here's just a little bit of what's coming up.
Well, they have influence, but they've been lied to and they've been cheated by North Korea. And they know that, and they're feeling the sting of it.
Why doesn't China help with North Korea?
Indeed, when I first ran for governor, I made the promise that we would do everything we could to make Louisiana a place where our sons and daughters could pursue their dreams instead of having to leave home to find good-paying jobs.
The Louisiana governor sees potential for good things ahead.
I wanted it so bad, and I know these guys did too, coaches. And, you know, we wanted it for our seniors especially, because they've just been great, and they've been great leaders for us all. But Louisville was a better team today.
A tough loss for Michigan at the NCAA basketball championship.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Well, officials say 14 people have been wounded in a stabbing attack at a Houston area college campus. Cy-Fair Volunteer Fire Department spokesman Robert Rossa said 12 people were taken to an area hospital after the attack at the Lone Star Community College Systems campus in Cypress. The Harris County Sheriff's Department confirmed at least 14 people wounded, and that authorities, they have one suspect in custody. Both agencies say at least four of those injured were life-flighted in critical condition. Rossa said several patients refused treatment at the scene, and all the wounds were consistent with stabbing. A Harris County Sheriff's Office spokesman said authorities don't believe a second suspect was involved. Lone Star had earlier posted an alert on its website warning of two armed suspects, and the campus went into lockdown. California lawmakers are considering making the Boy Scouts of America and other youth groups that do not accept gay, transgender, or atheist members and leaders ineligible for some state tax exemptions. Some cities have withdrawn free rent and other subsidies from the Boy Scouts over the years, but legislation introduced by State Senator Ricardo Lara would make California the first state to punish the Scouts for its policy prohibiting gay members and troop leaders. The bill by the Long Beach Democrat is scheduled for an initial committee hearing tomorrow. The legislation would deny tax-exempt status to nonprofit youth groups that discriminate on the basis of gender identity, race, sexual orientation, nationality, religion, or religious affiliation. The Legislative Analyst Office says that the Boy Scouts and its California affiliates would have to pay corporate taxes on donations and income from fees. Senators writing a massive immigration bill plan to greatly increase the number of visas going to high-tech workers, but they're arguing over worker protections. The dispute comes as lawmakers race to put the finishing touches on their sweeping legislation in time to release it this week or next. At issue are H-1B visas, where high-tech companies can use those to bring specially skilled workers to the U.S. The current cap of $65,000 is too low to meet demand. Senators looking to raise it as high as $150,000. But a dispute has risen because Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois is pushing for higher wages and trying to crack down on companies that use the visas to train workers here in the U.S. and then send them back overseas to work. Many analysts and diplomats say that while North Korea has issued a number of provocative threats, their actions are nothing new, and since this is a pattern, we shouldn't be alarmed. Former CIA operative Bob Baer doesn't agree. Here he is on CNN.
They say it's different. They say that North Korea is determined to have a deliverable nuclear weapon, that North Korea has taken offense at the White House's actions. It's coming back at it, threats by General Thurman and the rest of it. And they are really worried about some sort of accident happening to trigger this, or in fact the North Koreans may attempt to make a statement by firing a missile somewhere. They think it's different this time.
Now, the question is, how much does U.S. intelligence know about activities in North Korea?
We don't know much. The people I've been talking to, one of them has just been in North Korea, talked to North Koreans, but frankly, he didn't get much from them. The North Korean military can move large units without causing a spike in intercepts or anything. They can move missiles. They can launch them at a minute's notice. And frankly, as we've always been, we're blind to North Korea. It's nobody's fault. It's a hermit kingdom. Mm. They keep their own counsel, say whatever you like, but it's very difficult to predict what they're going to do. Now, we're all keeping our fingers crossed that this is bluster. But again, the Korean experts I talk to are starting to worry.
And according to a recent poll, most Americans don't believe this can be solved diplomatically. Is the situation precarious?
Well, we need to reopen communications with North Korea. We have to start recognizing what they think of their legitimate demands. Their leadership is isolated. They live in a bubble. They truly believe that they're a major military power and that they can hit the United States and hit it hard. And, you know, we just simply have to talk them back from this position, which right now we're not doing. This is not the kind of regime you got to say, listen, if we stop talking to them, they'll behave. They don't work that way. The Koreans will do something if we don't quickly establish some sort of communications.
And on a lighter note, former President Bill Clinton appeared before a meeting of the Clinton Global Initiative University to be interviewed by comedian Stephen Colbert.
I took the liberty of opening you a Twitter account. Now, President Clinton was taken. William Jefferson Clinton was taken. But Prez Billy Jeff was available. Would you like to break into the 21st century right now and send your first tweet? I'll type it.
You'll type it?
I'll type it. 140 characters or less.
Just spent. Amazing time with Colbert.
Sound good?
Is he sane?
Is he sane?
He is cool.
Can I put an exclamation mark at the end of that, sir?
Also, during that discussion, the topic of TED Talks came up.
Have you done TED Talks?
I have, and I like them.
Have you ever thought of having the Clinton Global Initiative and TED Talks team up to make Bill and Ted's excellent initiative? Think about it.
That's a wonderful idea.
And here's a special report about the Blue Angels.
For more than 60 years, the Blue Angels have dazzled audiences at air shows worldwide. But the demonstration team has been grounded the rest of the year because of budget cuts. A Navy spokesman says the elite fighter pilots will be allowed to fly minimal hours to maintain flight proficiency in their FA-18 jets. But the entire six-jet squadron will not have any group practices.
Coming up on America's Radio News, the Olympic bomber wants to keep profits from his autobiography, but the government says no. Last call, 4 a.m. in California. That's being proposed in the legislature there. Also, the Senate Minority Leader's office was bugged, but by whom? If it's important to you, it's important to us. Coast to coast, right here on America's Radio News.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News. Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
Covering the U.S. and the world on America's Radio News, this is Ernie Brown. The top U.S. military commander in the Pacific said North Korea's pursuit of nuclear weapons and the long-range ballistic missiles represents a clear and direct threat to the U.S. and its allies in the region. Admiral Samuel Locklear, the commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, tells the Senate committee today that Kim Jong-un, the country's young and still relatively untested new leader, has used the past year to consolidate his power. Locklear says North Korea is keeping a large percentage of its combat forces along the demilitarized zone with South Korea, a position that allows North Korea to threaten the U.S. and South Korean civilian and military personnel. Locklear also tells the committee that this situation creates an environment marked by the potential for miscalculation. A large spring snowstorm delivering heavy snow, high winds, and freezing drizzle is causing travel problems from Wyoming to Minnesota. In Wyoming, a 100-mile stretch of Interstate 25 between Cheyenne and Douglas was closed today, as well as a 125-mile section of I-80 between Laramie and Rawlins. Conditions in South Dakota caused the postponement of numerous local elections, and some schools in Minnesota dismissed their students early today. High winds, freezing drizzle, and some snow affecting parts of Kansas as well. Snow in Denver has been lighter than expected, but still around 500 flights were canceled at Denver International Airport. The storm also, there's concern it could produce some heavy thunderstorms and possible tornadoes in Tornado Alley in Oklahoma and in the North Texas area. And Brad Paisley's collaboration with LL Cool J on Accidental Racist has accidentally kicked up some controversy. The song about racial perception has drawn ire from both the country and the urban music worlds after its wide release. Haisley's publicist says he isn't giving interviews about the song, but he did briefly address the debate on Twitter, where he reposted a blog entry and noted the debate is cool. He also told fans in his album Wheelhouse, out this week, it's far from easy listening. LL Cool J's publicist didn't immediately respond to messages. At its heart, the song is about how cultural symbols favored by whites and blacks, the fashion choice of wearing Confederate flags or baggy pants, for instance, come loaded with extra meaning. President Obama speaking in Hartford, Connecticut about gun control. After that speech, families flew back to Washington with the president aboard Air Force One. Over the next couple of weeks, those families will lobby Congress to pass stricter gun control legislation. Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat of Connecticut, tells MSNBC he thinks the Newtown families will be very effective.
Well, there's nobody that can speak for gun violence legislation better than the Newtown families. They're going to be here this week. And in Connecticut, about a month ago, people didn't think that the state legislature could pass a ban on these high-capacity magazines. And the state legislature did with overwhelming support, in part because these Newtown families came to the state capitol, and legislators couldn't look them in the eye and say no. And listen, I know that the families aren't going to be able to see every member of the United States Senate this week and next week, but every senator has to ask, do they want to just sit on the sidelines and allow this to happen again? It is going to happen again. Maybe it won't be 20 kids, but even if it's 5 or 10 or 3, we need to do something here to make sure that it doesn't.
Senator Murphy said the NRA doesn't deserve to win this debate.
But listen, I think the NRA is a sideshow, and I think the NRA is a paper tiger. In the 2012 elections, they put money into 16 U.S. Senate races, and they lost 13 of them. They have this mythology here that just has absolutely no basis in reality. And so, yeah, they're certainly powerful. But I think that as members get down to the chamber, and they have these discussions with the Newtown families, and they look at the real political record of the NRA, they're going to figure out that it's pretty easy to vote for gun violence legislation and not have any political ramifications back home.
And then Ohio Senator Rob Portman joined Politico for a discussion on how to get the nation's economy back on track. He said it all comes down to repairing the broken tax code.
It's true there are a lot of folks out there who are going to try to protect, you know, their own preference. But look, you know, we spent since 1986 making our code more complicated. Every other one of our global competitors, including all of the countries of the so-called OECD, the other developed countries, all of them have reformed their tax code except us. And all of them have lowered their rates. Except us, every single one of them, to the point that we now have the highest rates in the world, which is not a number one title that you want to have, because it drives investment and capital to other countries. And that's what's happening. We're losing corporate headquarters right and left. We're losing acquisitions. America's economy is shrinking relative to the global economy, in part because of a tax code that's out of date. So the corporate community better get their act together and, you know, come to Washington not to say, don't touch my preference, but to say we must reform this tax code to make our economy more competitive. If we don't do that, we'll continue to see the loss of jobs.
And then regarding the death of Margaret Thatcher, one of her colleagues, Britain's ambassador to the U.S., Peter Westmacott, told MSNBC all about her.
I think that in the United Kingdom, she remains a figure who does cause very strong views, passions on both sides. She was a controversial figure as Prime Minister. There were strong passions in both directions. But I think she's a towering figure of recent British politics. She may go down as perhaps the most important peacetime Prime Minister in modern times. She did have a very strong view that it was not for the trade unions to dominate the UK economy. And if you remember, when she was elected Prime Minister, we had had the winter of discontent. We'd called in the IMF. We were essentially bankrupt. And she felt very strongly that the United Kingdom was headed in the wrong direction. And she did some very, very tough things. She took on the miners, she took on the unions, but she also did other things. She spread, for example, the appeal of capitalism, the idea of shareholding for ordinary human beings, way across British society in a way that had never happened before. She gave more people a direct stake in the economy in a kind of capitalist way than anyone had before her. And that may have had a lasting impact as well. So she was a reformer, she was a transformer, she was very tough, but she knew what she was trying to do.
Standing by now at the legal desk, here's John Norman.
A California lawmaker believes that last call for drinks at 2 a.m. is too early to set down the shot glasses and beer steins. State Senator Mark Leno's proposal to let the liquor flow until 4 a.m. as a way to draw more tourists and with them more revenue and jobs is already spawning a sharp debate from watering holes from San Francisco to Los Angeles. Leno says the measure would make California more competitive with other hotspots like New York, Las Vegas, and Miami. Night spot owners say a later last call will be good for business, but law enforcement officials argue it increases the chances that cities will see more public drunkenness, violence, drunken driving, and possibly fatalities. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News, the IRS fighting identity theft. Also, police have to break up celebrations after Louisville wins big last night. Big banks sending checks to those who lost their homes. And we'll talk to a reporter from Politico about the gun control deals going on in the Senate right now. All of it on the way on America's Radio News.
Bringing you the very latest from across America and around the world. America's Radio News. And the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., getting you the information you need right here on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown. You're listening to The Drive Home, and here are some of the stories on the way.
Well, they have influence, but they've been lied to and they've been cheated by North Korea. And they know that, and they're feeling the sting of it.
Why doesn't China help with North Korea?
Indeed, when I first ran for governor, I made the promise that we would do everything we could to make Louisiana a place where our sons and daughters could pursue their dreams instead of having to leave home to find good-paying jobs.
The Louisiana governor sees potential for good things ahead.
I wanted it so bad, and I know these guys did too, coaches. And, you know, we wanted it for our seniors especially because they've just been great, and they've been great leaders for us all. But Louisville was a better team today.
A tough loss for Michigan at the NCAA basketball championship.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
The nation's largest banks begin sending payments this week to millions of Americans who may have been wrongfully foreclosed upon during the housing crisis. The Federal Reserve and the U.S. Comptroller of the Currency say a total of $3.6 billion in cash will be distributed to 4.2 million borrowers. Payments will range from $300 to $125,000. About 90% of borrowers whose mortgages were serviced by 11 of the banks will receive payments by the end of April, the last group of payments expected by mid-July. The banks, which include Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, reached a tax settlement, or a settlement rather, with the federal agencies in January. They agreed to pay a total of $9.3 billion in cash and reductions in mortgage balances. The Air Force is grounding about a third of its active duty combat aircraft because of automatic spending cuts. The stand down will affect units stationed in the U.S., Europe, and the Pacific. Those units include fighter, bomber, aggressor, and airborne warning and control squadrons. Air Combat Command at Joint Base Langley Eustis in Hampton, Virginia, made the announcement today. Some units deployed include the F-16s, the F-22s, A-10s, and B-1s. They'll be standing down after they return home from their deployments. Other units began today. The Air Force says the stand down is a result of cuts to the command's operations and maintenance account. The Air Force said it has to reduce its flying by 45,000 fewer training hours before October 1st than it previously planned. Former NFL players trying to sue the league over concussion-linked injuries have argued in court that the NFL glorified violence and profited from damaging hits to the head. The player's lawyer, David Frederick, also called the NFL's brain injury committee a sham that spread misinformation. Frederick's remarks came in a pivotal hearing in Philadelphia on lawsuits filed by about 4,200 former players and their families. Some players are suffering from dementia or depression, and they fault the league for rushing them back on the field when they were hurt. NFL lawyer Paul Clement said the teams bear primary responsibility for health and safety under the player's contract, and he said injury claims belong in arbitration under the collective bargaining agreement. U.S. District Judge Anita Brody appears most interested in whether the contract gives anybody specific responsibility for latent brain injuries. Katie Glick joins us, a reporter for Politico, to update us on the latest goings-on regarding the gun ideas that are being thrown around in the Senate. I call them ideas because I don't think we have a specific bill yet. Katie, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so what is the latest? I understand there was a deadline of 5 o'clock today.
That's right. So the very latest is that as of 7 o'clock, or about 7 here, Senator Manchin, West Virginia, said that he's quote, getting there, really getting there with Senator Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania, with regard to the possibility of some sort of bipartisan negotiation there. And in addition to that, Senator Reid and the Democrats in the Senate believe that they have enough votes to put together in order to fend off a Republican filibuster on gun legislation. So lots of big developments really in the last hour or so.
Now, you know, I've only seen a few Republicans say they were interested in filibustering that. It seems like that they would have plenty of votes to overcome that.
Right. You know, we've only seen a handful of Republicans be vocal on the issue, but at the same time, we've also seen people like Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell say that that's possibly something that he would get involved in. So, you know, in addition to him, you have Rand Paul and, you know, some of his colleagues who are pretty big names. And so, you know, that was perhaps generating a bit of concern for some people on the guns issue, but it does look like they may have enough votes on the Democratic side to be able to move forward regardless.
All right. Now, what are the actual issues that they would be voting on?
Sure. Well, if in fact we end up seeing a vote on the Democratic legislation on gun control, what may actually result is a bit of a more watered-down version if it's in fact going to pass the entire Senate. But it's something that at least initially would include things like universal background checks, and then as a separate issue, we would see a ban on assault weapons, but that's in fact going to be separate from the bigger bill. But then also Senator Manchin and Senator Toomey look to be trying to hammer out a deal of their own, which would also be tacked on as an amendment.
Well, it sounds like everybody has their own ideas about what they want to accomplish, and without a single idea, I wonder if they're going to be able to get much through.
Definitely be interesting to see what ends up getting through. Again, lots of focus on, as you mentioned, this possible bipartisan agreement between Senators Manchin and Toomey. And again, as you mentioned, that deadline was 5 p.m. So we'll see what ends up coming from that. But beyond that, lots of kind of negotiating back and forth on that larger Democratic proposal on this issue.
Is there a time frame as far as trying to get this out of the Senate and over to the House?
Well, Senator Reid has made very clear that he wants a vote on Thursday, and he made that clear even before, he made later statements regarding votes available to overcome a filibuster. So looks like he's really trying to move on this issue, and as well, we've seen President Obama making kind of his closing arguments on gun control. You know, you saw him back in Connecticut yesterday raising the issue and, very much an emotional speech. So this kind of does seem to be the week for that.
And have the Newtown families that came back with President Obama, have they been effective in their lobbying efforts?
Well, that's right. They do look to have been deployed to the Senate, to a number of senators' offices on Capitol Hill, Republicans as well as Democrats, especially those Democrats from red states. And that does seem to be something that's kind of ongoing. I don't know if we have full results from that yet, but they're mobilized. Mayors Against Illegal Guns is mobilized. And certainly something the administration looks to be focused on this week as well.
Katie, you've been hanging around the Capitol enough. Do you think this is going to end up being a party line type vote, or do you think there's enough crossover?
Well, again, it really depends on what happens, with what we may see ultimately as an amendment, that results from the talks between Senator Manchin and Senator Toomey. Because Senator Toomey, some people consider him, a bit more on the Tea Party side. He's a very conservative member of Congress. And so, if he's able to get on board with some sort of agreement, then the prospects do seem a bit more likely. And beyond that, we're going to have to wait and see, what the final results of any sort of debate on Thursday look like and which Republicans end up, showing support for elements of that bill.
Katie Glick, reporter with Politico on America's Radio Newsline. Thank you, Katie. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Thanks very much for having me.
Standing by at the entertainment desk now, here's John Norman.
Coming soon to a movie theater near you, museum art exhibits from around the world. The people who have brought live Metropolitan Opera performances to the big screen across the globe are now venturing into the art world. It begins Thursday with an Edward Manet exhibit from the Royal Academy of the Arts in London. It'll be screened to 450 U.S. theaters and about 600 across the globe. Two more shows, one featuring the works of Edvard Munch and another with Johan Vermeer, are already lined up to get the big screen treatment. The presentations are actually slickly produced documentaries, with noted art historian Tim Marlowe taking viewers on a VIP guided tour of the galleries. Producers see it as a way to bring art to millions around the world. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News, not too many takers on the Obama budget on either side just yet. It's going to be released tomorrow officially, but a lot of folks have already seen it. A stabbing attack injures several people at a college in Houston, and a man with an air rifle arrested near the Obama motorcade. Covering the U.S. and the world, this is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
on your radio, and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News. Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News. The FBI has been asked to look into whether Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell's campaign headquarters was bugged after a recording of a private campaign meeting surfaced in a liberal-leaning magazine. McConnell campaign manager Jesse Benton said his staff is working with the FBI because of what he called Watergate-style tactics to bug the office. Mother Jones Magazine published the recording of the February meeting in which McConnell aides were discussing research into potential Democratic challengers, including actress Ashley Judd, who later decided not to run. Aides talked on the record about Judd's political positions, religious beliefs, and mental health. Benton said a recording device had been placed in McConnell's office without consent. Neither the FBI in Louisville nor the magazine immediately returned telephone calls seeking comment. They're wondering who put the bug there. Police in Connecticut say they arrested a homeless man who was shooting at a can with a pellet rifle not far from President Obama's motorcade route. Bloomfield police say Joseph Stravinskas was found in a wooded area yesterday shooting at cans with a rifle. Police say he initially refused to drop his rifle, but he eventually did and was arrested. That arrest came after the president arrived at the University of Hartford to argue for new gun control legislation. Bloomfield police say the arrest is unrelated to the president's visit and occurred before the president's motorcade left the university following his speech. The 27-year-old Stravinskas was charged with breach of peace, threatening, and interfering with police. He was arraigned in Hartford today. As of earlier, he hadn't been able to post his bond, so he's still in jail. A top U.S. diplomat says the growing incidence of hacking that originates inside China is undermining trust between the two countries and harms Beijing's long-term interests. U.S. Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth Robert Hormats said today that Washington believes cyber intrusions originating from China that result in the theft of sensitive information have reached very high levels. He urged China to take firm action against hacking. He said Washington is taking an active role in addressing the problem and will continue to raise its concerns with top Chinese officials. Hormats' comments in an address to the Internet Industry Conference in Beijing follow a recent report accusing a Chinese military unit of carrying out a years-long hacking attack against U.S. companies. China's government and their military deny carrying out any hacking attacks. They say they don't do that kind of thing. Battling over the budget continues in Washington, but some hope of a compromise still seems apparent. Senator Lindsey Graham, speaking with Fox News, praised President Obama for making some new cut proposals.
Within his budget, he embraces change CPI, basically recalculating the benefit formula for Social Security and Medicare, which will save a lot of money over the next 30 years, and the left is going nuts. I want to compliment the president for embracing that change, as recommended by Bowles, Simpson, just about every bipartisan group who's serious about budget reform, and he did some things on the Medicare front that are small steps toward entitlement reform.
Now, Senator Graham also talked about the debate over immigration reform as that goes on.
What is it worth to secure that border? A lot to me. We've already spent $18 billion since 2006. We'll spend some more money. We're going to spend it wisely. It's about controlling jobs, controlling the border, having a guest worker program so you can access legal workforce when you can't find people here to do a job at a competitive wage. But at the end of the day, I think immigration reform is going to help the economy. There's some reports coming out next week that will show if you legalize this workforce, they pay taxes, they live within the law and contribute.
And regarding gun legislation that could be coming up in the Senate, Congressman Elijah Cummings, a Democrat of Maryland, told MSNBC yesterday he thinks that the American people are smart enough to, if they see a group of Republicans refusing to even talk about new gun legislation, they'll get even with them at the next election.
Well, I think the American people, I've often said that the American people are reasonable and voters are smart. And they have looked at this situation and they understand it. They understand that nobody's trying to interfere with anybody's right to own a gun. And they want common sense legislation, like my bill, the trafficking, anti-trafficking
yes.
bill, which is just common sense. The only people that could be against that bill, Martin, are criminals and those who want to buy guns illegally for criminals. And they won't even, this bunch in the Senate, wouldn't even want to have a discussion on something like that. And by the way, just this morning I was in a school and I asked about, 50, I guess it was maybe 150 kids, how many had known of somebody who had died from gun violence in the last year? And Martin, two-thirds of them raised their hands.
Well, regarding North Korea, earlier today, Admiral Samuel Locklear, the commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, and in testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee, reiterated that should North Korea try to attack the U.S. or any of our allies, we're ready.
Are you satisfied that we would be ready if there were such a limited military action from North Korea?
I am satisfied that we're ready today, yes, sir.
Do you believe that we have the ability to intercept a missile if the North Koreans launch a missile, as is widely reported they would do in coming days?
I believe we have the credible ability to defend the homeland, to defend Hawaii, defend Guam, to defend our four deployed forces, and defend our allies.
Do we have the capability to intercept a missile if the North Koreans launch within the next several days?
We do.
Would you recommend such action?
If the missile was in defense of the homeland, I would certainly recommend that action. And if it was defense of our allies, I would recommend that action. An impetuous young leader continues to focus on provocation rather than on his own people.
And then we go to the NCAA championship last night. It was Louisville over Michigan, 82-76. This is Coach Rick Pitino with CBS's Jim Nance.
The University of Michigan, for a young basketball team, to play that well is absolutely incredible. They are a great basketball team. We beat a great basketball team, probably because I have the 13 toughest guys I've ever coached.
And, Coach, I hear them. I'm picking up something here that you kind of owe them one with this victory. What's this all about?
Well, about 12, 13 games ago, all these guys, if they say hello, they get a tattoo. They said, if you win the national championship, Coach, you getting a tattoo? I said, hell yes, I'm getting a tattoo. All throughout my life, I've had the greatest players. Players put coaches in the Hall of Fame.
And then from the Michigan vantage point, it wasn't that big of a celebration. After the game, guards Trey Burke and Spike Albrecht expressed their disappointment in the loss.
It hurts a lot. Just to get to the national championship game, just to play for the national championship, it hurts so much. A lot of people didn't expect us to even get this far. And a lot of people didn't expect us to even get past the second round.
I wanted it so bad, and I know these guys did too, coaches. And, you know, we wanted it for our seniors especially. Because they've just been great, and they've been great leaders for us all. But Louisville was a better team today.
Coming up on America's Radio News, the White House says North Korea is making things worse. Illegal immigrants tell their stories for the immigration bill debate that's coming. And hundreds of flights were canceled today at the Denver International Airport due to a spring snowstorm. Covering the United States and the world, this is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
Get in the know. This is America's Radio News. From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network. The Drive Home.
Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news on America's Radio News, the drive home continues at 6 after the top of the hour. Here are just a few of the stories coming up.
I announced a series of executive actions to reduce gun violence and keep our kids safe. And I put forward common sense proposals, much like those that passed here in Connecticut, for Congress to consider.
Gun control becomes the issue in Washington.
We have winter weather advisories out towards Akron and Lyman. So there'll still be some snow, but we're looking at lesser amounts, probably in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 inches of snow or 3 to 5 inches of snow.
A spring snowstorm chills things across Colorado and Wyoming.
You know, I've seen a lot of openings and a lot of, you know, chances to go in and attack, and that's what I try to do. And, you know, as far as, you know, getting the mano-a-mano match with Trey Burke, I was just trying to win the game.
Making the charge and turning the game around for Louisville. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Officials say 14 people were wounded in a stabbing attack at a Houston area college campus by a 21-year-old student. Cy-Fair Volunteer Fire Department spokesman Robert Rossa said 12 were taken to the area hospitals and after the attack on the Lone Star Community College System campus in Cypress. The Harris County Sheriff's Department confirmed 14 people wounded and that authorities had the one suspect in custody. Both agencies say at least four of those injured had to be life-flighted in critical condition. Ross has said several patients refused treatment at the scene and all the wounds were consistent with stabbing. Harris County Sheriff's Office spokesman Tom Gilliland said that authorities don't believe a second suspect was involved. Lone Star had earlier posted an alert on its website warning of two suspects. The school went into lockdown almost immediately. It turned out there was only one suspect. A large spring snowstorm delivering heavy snow, high winds, and freezing drizzle is causing travel problems from Wyoming to Minnesota. In Wyoming, a 100-mile stretch of Interstate 25 between Cheyenne and Douglas was closed today, as well as a 125-mile section of I-80 between Laramie and Rawlins. Conditions in South Dakota caused a postponement of numerous local elections, and some schools in Minnesota dismissed students early. High winds, freezing drizzle, and some snow is affecting parts of Kansas. Snow in Denver was lighter than expected, but still around 500 flights were canceled there at Denver International Airport. The storm also producing heavy rains and some tornado activity possible in Oklahoma and North Texas. The White House says North Korea's threat of nuclear war and warnings to foreigners to evacuate the South Korean capital of Seoul is more unhelpful rhetoric that only escalates tensions and further isolates the communist regime. White House spokesman Jay Carney told reporters today that the U.S. is taking prudent measures to respond to stepped-up rhetoric from Pyongyang, including repositioning missile defense assets and the stealth bomber flights that were part of the joint military exercises with South Korea. Addressing the latest North Korean saber-rattling, Carney said it's unhelpful, it's concerning, and it's provocative. Well, with all the talk of that nuclear threat from North Korea, just what sort of bomb capacity does that country have? This is Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma.
Let's just look at North Korea. They have enough plutonium right now for from 6 to 8 bombs. I'm guessing it's a lot more than that. And the reason is, back in 1998 when Clinton was president, I remember we were talking about North Korea, and I questioned the fact that they, I thought they were further along than they were. And they said at that time, because I wrote a letter, and this is very important, on the 24th of August of 1998 to the Clinton administration at that time, I said, how long will it be until North Korea has a multi-stage rocket? It came back between 5 and 10 years. 7 days later, on August 31st, they fired one.
Whoa.
Now, if we were that far off in our intelligence back then, Rusty, where are we today? Are we any better, any closer to reality? I'd suggest no.
And then we go to Senator Johnny Isaacson from Georgia. He'll be meeting with some of the Newtown families. He told CBS that his thoughts on gun control legislation.
Well, first of all, the heart and soul of every American goes out to the families of those who lost their lives in Sandy Hook. And they deserve a right to be able to sit down and talk with me, and I gave them that right and will be happy to meet with them. There was no ambivalence on the gun issue. I think everybody knows what the issues are. We have not seen the final draft of the legislation that was produced, I understand, last night, but I think it deserves a vote up or down. Well, it's having an impact. It's getting the phones to ring, and they're ringing on both sides. Michael Bloomberg was running ads back in Georgia telling everybody to call Senator Chambliss and myself. I know there are other programs going on to drive the phone calls, and they're doing their job. You know, there are two amendments at issue here. One's the First Amendment that you enjoy, the freedom of speech. That's what they're enjoying. Second is the right to bear arms, which is the whole issue in terms of the gun control.
Now, some of those victims of the Newtown massacre, they flew back to Washington with the president on Air Force One to talk to Congress members. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut told MSNBC he thinks they'll be very effective.
Well, there's nobody that can speak for gun violence legislation better than the Newtown families. They're going to be here this week. And in Connecticut, about a month ago, people didn't think that the state legislature could pass a ban on these high-capacity magazines. And the state legislature did with overwhelming support, in part because these Newtown families came to the state capitol and legislators couldn't look them in the eye and say no. And listen, I know that the families aren't going to be able to see every member of the United States Senate this week and next week, but every senator has to ask, do they want to just sit on the sidelines and allow this to happen again? It is going to happen again. Maybe it won't be 20 kids, but even if it's 5 or 10 or 3, we need to do something here to make sure that it doesn't.
And then regarding the death of Margaret Thatcher, the first female prime minister of Great Britain, here's General Colin Powell talking about her on MSNBC.
There's no question about it, Andrea. They were a pair. And why? Well, they had a common view about economics. They had a common view about the power of democracy and free economic systems. They had a common view about the evil of communism. And in terms of the way Reagan and Thatcher approached the Soviet Union, is let's not destroy them. Let's just show these folks what a better world there is waiting for them. And it was that belief in democracy that you could show it as a candle to others to light up a darkened place is what I think made it so successful. And it's what gave Gorbachev something to work with rather than the implacable enemies that were out to destroy the Soviet Union.
Coming up on America's Radio News, the NFL being sued by former players over concussions. Entertainers approached the president to reform the criminal justice system. And we'll go in depth about the IRS. Covering the U.S. and the world, it's America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news, or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News. If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need always found right here on The Drive Home on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown. Kentucky police had to use pepper spray in an armored car to calm disturbances that erupted at the tail end of celebrations following the Cardinals' NCAA championship win over Michigan. Gatherings were mostly peaceful last night following Louisville's 82-76 victory, the school's first title since 1986. Louisville police said most of the 23 arrests were due to drunken or disorderly conduct, but things did get a little bit out of hand as the celebration was winding down early this morning. Police in riot gear and an armored car had to arrive after the crowds refused to disperse. Police spokeswoman Carrie Klein said that several scuffles followed. Some partiers threw bottles at police, hitting an officer in the head. He went to the hospital. Police responded with pepper spray. The officer is going to be okay. It'll take more than spelling to win this year's National Spelling Bee. The youngsters will have to know some definitions as well. For the first time, vocabulary is going to be part of the Scripps National Spelling Bee when the competition is held next month near the nation's capital. The spellers still take part in the traditional on-stage spelling rounds with a familiar bell, but they'll also take multiple-choice vocabulary tests to determine the semifinalist and the finalist. The final rounds will look the same, with spellers eliminated until there's a champion. Bee Executive Director Paige Kimball says the changes help reinforce the purpose of the Bee, which is to encourage students to broaden their knowledge of the English language. The Bee this year takes place at the end of May. And the budget proposal to be released by the White House tomorrow will include new steps to combat what the Internal Revenue Service says an exponential growth in tax refund-related identity theft. A preview of the measures provided by administration officials include increasing criminal sentences for those convicted of tax-related identity theft and creating new civil penalties for those who file fraudulent returns. The government would also limit access to the Social Security Administration files on deceased individuals that have been used for those seeking fraudulent refunds, and it removes Social Security numbers from some forms that employers have to provide the IRS. As of the end of 2012, the IRS had more than 3,000 employees, more than double from the previous year, working on identity theft issues alone. And speaking of the IRS, this is the man you want to know if you have an issue. Dan Pilla, the nation's leading advocate of taxpayer rights, IRS abuse prevention and cure, and IRS problems resolution. You'll find him online at taxhelponline.com. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ernie, how you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Well, glad to have you on the show. I mean, here we are just about a week away from drop-dead date, I suppose.
Yep.
Everybody's taxes are due. And this year, I understand that the IRS is going to make sure you pay every red cent.
Well, you know what? They're about paying every red cent, Ernie. There's no question about that. But with the with the increase in the budget deficits that we've had over the last couple of years, the IRS is really aggressive about collecting, and they have been so for the last little while here. At least the last 2 years, they've really turned the screws down on delinquent taxpayers.
How do you think the new health care law is going to affect what the IRS does? Because they're directly involved with that now.
Well, you know what, Ernie? We only have 6 minutes here to talk. I mean, we need 2 hours to get into that.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is this, and people don't realize this. The IRS is the face of national health care. They will be the ones enforcing the law. When you have interactions over your health care issues, those are going to be mostly with the Internal Revenue Service when it comes to the penalty that's imposed for not having an insurance, and when it comes to premium credit that applies for subsidizing the insurance policies. All of that's administered by the IRS. And what people don't realize is that even though they're going to be dealing with a so-called exchange, that exchange is the state agency that actually sells you the insurance, even though you deal with the exchange on matters of insurance, all of the information you provide to the exchange has to be verified through the IRS. And if there's a discrepancy, Ernie, between what the IRS shows and what the exchange shows, the IRS is going to be involved in enforcing any tax collection that arises as a result of those discrepancies. So you're going to have to deal with the IRS.
With the IRS, are you guilty until proven innocent?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the biggest problems that we have with dealing with the IRS is people don't understand that. You know, the IRS never has to prove you did it wrong. You have to prove you did it right. And that can be a great challenge for a lot of folks when they don't understand the procedures or what it is exactly they have to prove.
Yeah, that seems like it would be. It seems like it's the reverse of pretty much everything else you have in the legal system.
Yeah, no question about it. This is the only area of law really where the burden of proof is squarely on the taxpayer.
Is the IRS an efficient bureaucracy? Do they get the job done every year efficiently?
Well, it depends what you call efficient. I mean, if you look at the IRS's budget, Ernie, of about $13 billion a year, which is gigantic and going up, they've got about 100,000 employees, and you say, well, okay, you know, the IRS has got 100,000 employees, spends $13 billion a year, but last year it collected about $2.3 trillion. You'd say to yourself, well, that's pretty efficient. But, you know, when you stop and think about this for a minute, first of all, $4 out of every $5 collected by the federal government is not collected by the IRS. It's actually collected by employers through wage withholding. They're the ones that are responsible for doing the lion's share of the work, and the employers send the money to the Internal Revenue Service. And now when there's a delinquency, of course, the IRS gets involved. But $4 out of every $5 are paid by employers. And the other thing to keep in mind, Ernie, is we've got a tax system that revolves around about 130 million individual tax returns and then about another 150 or so million business tax returns. So you're looking at 280 million different collection points. That's not very efficient in my mind.
Now, I have about a minute for this segment. I wanted to ask you, do we have a lot of cheating going on?
Well, there's cheating going on, Ernie. There's no question about that. I mean, anytime you get a tax system as massive as ours is and as complex as ours is, you get some cheating. But the fact of the matter is the vast majority of people that have tax delinquencies have tax delinquencies because of financial problems that arise through no fault of their own, not because they're tax cheaters.
All right, and that's something I want to talk about because I'd like you to stay another segment and because I know there are a lot of people who owe the IRS, and oftentimes what ends up happening is you end up owing more in penalties and interest than you do in the actual tax that you owe.
Yeah, that's true.
And it can seem like there's absolutely no solution for that, so I definitely want to talk about that. Also, who is getting the audit letter these days? So, Dan, can you hang on with me?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right, Dan Pilla is with us, the nation's leading advocate of taxpayer rights. You'll find him online, taxhelponline.com. Is his website. Coming up on the program, more conversation about the IRS. Also, the Senate Minority Leader's office was bugged, but the question is, by whom? The Blue Angels have to call it a season. Their budget is cut, and not many takers, speaking of budget, for the president's that's coming out tomorrow. His budget not popular with his party or the Republicans. Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, it's right here on America's Radio News Network.
On your radio and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News.
And always informative. This is America's Radio News.
From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown, 27 before the top of the hour. The drive home continues. Here are some of the stories on the way.
I announced a series of executive actions to reduce gun violence and keep our kids safe. And I put forward common sense proposals, much like those that passed here in Connecticut, for Congress to consider.
Gun control becomes the issue in Washington.
We have winter weather advisories out towards Akron and Lyman. So there'll still be some snow, but we're looking at lesser amounts, probably in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 inches of snow or 3 to 5 inches of snow.
A spring snowstorm chills things across Colorado and Wyoming.
You know, I've seen a lot of openings and a lot of, you know, chances to go in and attack, and that's what I try to do. And you know, as far as, you know, getting the mano-a-mano match with Trey Burke, I was just trying to win the game.
Making the charge and turning the game around for Louisville. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Thanks for being with us on America's Radio News. I held a guest over from last segment. Dan Pilla here, the nation's leading advocate of taxpayer rights since we're a week away from tax day. We're learning a little bit about the IRS, and if you are one of those folks who unfortunately find yourself in a position where you can't pay what you owe, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Dan tonight. You'll find, by the way, everything he's talking about on his website, taxhelponline.com. Dan, what do you do if you find yourself in a position where you owe money, and a lot of it, and it grows very quickly with the IRS, and you just simply don't have it?
Well, there's a couple things, Ernie. First of all, if we're talking about, I can pay the tax, but I can't pay the penalties and the interest, which is a lot of the situation. You know, as you mentioned before the break, the penalties and the interest can often double or triple the tax bill. And I've heard people tell me 1,000 times I can pay the taxes. It's the penalties and interest that are killing me. What the IRS doesn't tell you is that every single penalty provision of the tax code has what's called a reasonable cause provision. And what that means simply is that if you acted in good faith and based on a reasonable cause for your actions and you didn't deliberately set out to cheat or deceive or mislead the IRS, the penalties typically don't apply. And so you can go into the IRS and say, look, guys, I acted in good faith. Here's my situation. My failure to file, for example, or failure to pay was due not to deliberate disregard of IRS rules and regulations, but, you know, maybe there was an illness, an injury, a failed marriage, a drug or alcohol problem in the family. Maybe there was a natural disaster, fire, flood, hurricane, catastrophic injury of some. Any of these kinds of things can be reasonable cause that the IRS will look at and say, well, okay, based on that, we see that you're a good taxpayer and you didn't really try to cheat, and so they'll cancel the penalties and the interest on the penalties. That gets the bill down to a point, Ernie, where now it's manageable and you can pay it off. Now, for those folks that just face a mountain of debt and it doesn't make any difference whether the penalties are canceled, the IRS will negotiate with you based on your ability to pay. And we've helped a lot of people through a program called an offer and compromise where you go in there and say, look, guys, I owe you $50,000. There's no way I can pay that much, but I can pay, let's say, $10,000 or $15,000, whatever the number is. The IRS is willing to settle if you can prove that the amount you are offering is the most they can collect from you.
Now, would that take you off the hook for the rest of it?
Takes you off the hook for the rest of it. That's exactly right. Now, there's a probationary period, however. So if the IRS agrees with you, yeah, okay, we'll settle your case for 10 cents on the dollar, let's say. That's not a magic number, but just to illustrate, we'll settle your case for 10 cents on the dollar. However, you have to agree to file your tax returns on time and pay your taxes on time for the next 5 years. And if you fall off the beam during that period of time, we're going to reinstate these delinquencies.
And probably at the 5-year point or wherever that you did fall off the beam, so to speak.
Well, yeah, and so what happens is it goes back, and all the penalties and interest get tagged back on, and, you know, now the bill is giant size again. So, you know, what I tell clients is this. You can negotiate with the IRS. We can go make one deal with the IRS, but you're not going to make two deals. So what that means very simply is, okay, let's get your deal negotiated, and now you got to move heaven and earth to stay current with your return filings and payments from this point forward, because we're not going to be able to do this a second time.
Are there a lot of people in trouble like that?
Millions of them. Millions of people. The IRS's delinquency records now, first of all, they're saying there's about 13 to 15 million people out there, Ernie, that have stopped filing tax returns altogether because of tax delinquencies. You know, they just get so frustrated with the accumulation of penalties and interest, and every year that goes by, they owe more problems, or owe more taxes, and their problems are not manageable, and they just get further and further in debt, and these people have dropped out of the system. And then there's another roughly 15 million people or so that have tax delinquencies on the books that the IRS is trying to collect, and maybe they're relatively small numbers, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, that sort of thing. But about 60% of the people that owe money to the IRS owe more than $10,000. So for a lot of folks, Ernie, it's a big deal.
All right, now who these days is getting the audit letter?
Well, you know, anybody with a pulse can get an audit letter. There's just no question about that. You know, I think one of the areas that the IRS typically looks at and has been focused on more intensively in the last 5 years is small businesses. You know, so if you've got a small Schedule C business, self-employed business, a small farm-type operation, a so-called Schedule F business, or you've got an LLC or a small corporation, the IRS looks closely at those. And in the last couple of years have been focusing closely on what they call flow-throughs. And these are Subchapter S businesses, the so-called small business corporation, and partnerships. And the IRS is looking at those very closely, particularly from the income standpoint on those businesses.
All right. And I'm curious, does the IRS always tell you about the remedies to the problems?
Very rarely they tell you about the remedies. You know, they got publications and stuff they pass out.
Yeah.
You know, Ernie, I've written books over the years, as you know, and I've written literally thousands and thousands of pages of discussion on taxpayers' rights. The IRS has got a publication called Your Rights as a Taxpayer. It's publication one. It's 4 pages long. Come on.
So you don't have a whole lot. It's a leaflet almost.
Exactly. They're not telling you much.
All right. Okay. So they're not. You can't depend on them to tell. But there is a solution to the problem, though.
Oh, absolutely. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. I don't care what your problem is. I don't care how long you've suffered with it. I don't care what you've tried to do to fix it. I don't care what somebody's told you can't do to fix it. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case.
Now, you know, I've run into IRS agents over the years. I've met people, and they seem like nice enough folks. They got a difficult job. Have you run into situations where you find just outright abuse going on, or is it just maybe misunderstandings, or the taxpayer didn't handle it right, or the auditor didn't handle it right?
Well, it's all of the above, Ernie.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest problem that we have is the tax law is very, very confusing, and people don't know what their obligations are, and they don't know what their rights are. They don't understand how to prove their case. They don't have the right documents to prove their case. So you got that problem right off the bat. Secondly, when you're dealing with tax auditors, too many of these tax auditors are not fully educated as to what the tax law is. And it's amazing, Ernie, that auditors go through these, that these IRS people go through this training, and they go through, you know, all of this education, and they still don't understand what the proper procedures are and what the proper rules are in various elements of the law. So you got that problem. And then you got enough of the outright abuse that it's a problem. Now, you know, I've obviously dealt with thousands of IRS people over the years, and most of them, Ernie, are trying to do the right thing under very difficult, in fact, I would argue, impossible circumstances. But you have there's too many of them out there that just don't care about the law, and they just cheat blind.
All right, 30 seconds. How long should you keep your documents?
6 years from the date you file your tax return.
All right, so hang on to them. For example, if you just file your tax return April 15th of this year, you need to have them until 2019.
That's right. That would be for 2012.
All right, so roughly 7 years.
One more thing, very quickly. Keep a copy of your tax return, the return itself, not the supporting records. Keep a copy of that tax return indefinitely.
All right, just forever.
Forever.
Okay. All right, Dan Pilla, you'll find him online, taxhelponline.com. Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm glad I can help, Ernie. Thanks.
You bet. All right, coming up on America's Radio News, Austin, Texas. They're the next location for Google's super fast internet. Microsoft skewering Google with ads about violating privacy. The top U.S. commander in the Pacific says North Korea is a threat. And we're going to spend some time with a gentleman who put together a documentary about North Korea and what the people there are really like. All coming up on America's Radio News.
If it's breaking now, it's breaking here. On America's Radio News. Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
News from around the world and across the nation, we always have it for you on the drive home on America's Radio News. It's 11 before the top of the hour. This is Ernie Brown. California lawmakers are considering making the Boy Scouts of America and other youth groups that don't accept gay, transgender, or atheist members and leaders ineligible for some state tax exemptions. Some cities have withdrawn free rent and other subsidies from the Boy Scouts over the years, but legislation introduced by Senator Ricardo Lara would make California the first state to punish the Scouts for its policy prohibiting gay members and troop leaders. The bill by the Long Beach Democrat is scheduled for an initial committee hearing tomorrow. The legislation would deny tax-exempt status to nonprofit youth groups that discriminate on the basis of gender identity, race, sexual orientation, nationality, religion, or religious affiliation. The legislative analyst office said that means the Boy Scouts and its California affiliates would have to pay corporate taxes on donations and income from fees. Now, we've been hearing a lot about the bluster from North Korea over the last few days, and the United States and South Korea say they're ready for any type of situation that could come up. What you don't always hear about is what really happens behind the scenes in North Korea. What are the people like? We had a chance, Rachel Sutherland and I, on the afternoon edition to talk to a documentary maker, and here's what he said. Rob Monch joins us. He's a documentary filmmaker who has spent some time in North Korea, and he has a documentary he's going to tell us about. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
What's the new one called?
The film is called Juche Strong, and I probably should immediately do a quick commercial break that if people are interested in the film, they should go to juchestrong.com, J-U-C-H-E, strong.com. And it's a documentary short that talks about specifically the propaganda apparatus in North Korea, what specifically it's comprised of, what the national ideology is, and obviously part and parcel of the story that the ruling Kim family is telling to the average North Koreans has to deal with their efforts to combat the Yankee imperialists embodied in American soldiers. So there's huge relevance to the crisis that's going on right now.
All right. When we talk about North Korea, everybody thinks immediately that you have a brainwashed population. Is that true, or are they just simply that's what they know?
So a big part of what my film attempts to do is to sort of normalize the North Korean people. I think in this most recent round of media coverage, and I think just generally over the last two decades or so, the way that North Koreans are presented is as pure caricatures. We completely strip them of their humanity. We completely deny that they have any subjective worldview or a deeper humanity or potentially any aspects of their existence are actually startlingly normal and similar to the lives of the average American. And I think that they're purely seen as brainwashed robots. Mm-hmm. This film is attempting to sort of combat that caricature and to say, wait a minute, the 30 million people that occupy this country are flesh and blood human beings just like the rest of us, and they do have a very particular worldview. A lot of them have a very particular worldview, and that worldview has been consciously crafted by a very specific and strategic set of propaganda. And that's, unfortunately, cuts against the prevailing media narrative, which is bizarre, emotionally bipolar, adolescent, trigger-happy, irrational ruling country that rules purely by force of its oppression.
Rob, we rarely get a window, though, into the North Korean people. So you're saying they are shaped by a certain worldview. Tell us a little bit more about what that worldview is.
Well, I'll tell you this. So the way that they present, the Americans are presented, I think that the average American here, given the press, would just say, well, they vaguely see us as the enemy. And that's it. That's where the understanding would stop. But my documentary talks about the fact that actually one of the essential elements of the way that the regime sells itself is protecting against American imperialists who are coming in order to pollute the pure Korean blood. There's actually a very clear and distinct racialist element, xenophobic element, to the way that Americans are talked about, that Americans are very typically presented as masculine forces who have an eye on North Korean women and are looking to pollute the pure Korean blood with Yankee capitalist blood. Additionally, wow. The way that the nuclear program is sold, and you would never get this impression from your average nightly newscast, the nuclear weapons program is sold as a defensive measure against Americans. It's not about conquering territory. It's not about spreading this socialist utopia. It's sold to the average North Korean farmer as a necessary means of beating back the North Koreans that are absolutely eager to come and conquer the North Korean territory and subsume North Koreans just like they've subsumed and tampered with and polluted the pure blood of South Koreans.
What do you know? What do you know about the lives of just the average person? Not just their worldview, but how do they live? How do folks live? What do they do to earn livings? What are the people like?
Mostly peasant farmers. It's brutal. I mean, it's absolutely brutal, and in no way would I ever underestimate how much suffering I think is in that country because of how horrifically mismanaged their economy is. It turns out that top-down Soviet-style economics is not particularly efficient, and North Korea has yet to get the memo on that. And as a result, there's millions of people that are constantly teetering towards starvation. But part of what the film is saying, though, is you can get people to withstand lots and lots of suffering as a result of their material deprivation if you say that that suffering is part of a larger, grander national story, that they're part of a mission, that that suffering has a purpose to it. And even if you look at the news releases that are being distributed right now by the Central News Agency in North Korea, that's always the way that it's framed, that the average farmers can do their job for the national mission by continuing to work hard, and that every single calorie they expend in that effort is helping North Korea to beat back the American imperialists.
Do they have hope that life will get better?
I think they do. And also, I mean, I think they do realize, and there's a lot of information that's coming from the outside where they're getting a clear sense that this deprivation is anomalous and that it's not normal. And they certainly believe that the ruling Kim family is sort of wedded to the campaign of improving their material existence. But the point is, you're willing to withstand a lack of material goods if you think it's for some grander purpose. And that's a message, or that's an insight that you would never get from the typical Western media portrayal of this country. Not now, not ever.
How do they view South Koreans?
Tampered. I think that they definitely have nothing but antipathy for the ruling South Korean government. And they think, unfortunately, that the average South Korean citizen has been swayed and been co-opted and been polluted by the Americans. But ultimately, they see the average South Korean as a brother. I mean, the utopia in the grand North Korean religion, the utopia is reunification. It's reunification with, and it's restoring this severed brotherhood with their South Korean, okay. Brothers and sisters.
Rob, what's the website again?
JucheStrong.com, JucheStrong.com. You can see the trailer and get more information about the film there.
Rob Montz with us on America's Radio News. Rob, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
On Wall Street today, the Dow ended up 60 points. The NASDAQ was up a little bit over 15.5, and the S&P 500 up a little bit over 5.5. Thanks for joining me on The Drive Home. We'll do it again tomorrow for a Wednesday. Same time right here. From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast. I'm Ernie Brown, and this is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News.